Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
It's Ann Liguori and Talking Golf on The Fan.
Well, good morning and welcome to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori on this Sunday morning, April 12th. Talking Golf with Ann Liguori is brought to you by Travelers Insurance for auto, home, and business. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. Well, happy Easter to you and hope you had a happy Passover. Wishing you the very best today and hope we all can find hope and happiness in the days and weeks to come. And on any normal year, this would be Master Sunday. This very day, the exciting final round at Augusta National amidst the backdrop of the pristine course, the azaleas, the magnolia trees. This would be the day that those with badges would rush out to the course once the gates open, place their seat around their favorite hole, many opting to grab a space on the 18th green in the hopes of seeing history unfold before their very eyes. This would be the dramatic culmination of an incredible week of walking the hilly terrain on the course, marveling at the beauty of the par 3 course, gathering under the big oak tree in front of the historic clubhouse, meeting and greeting a who's who in the golf industry and beyond. Well, for millions around the world, this is normally the day that they would invite friends over, sit in front of their television sets to watch the drama of the final round of the Masters. And, you know, there has not really been a year in my 21 years of covering the Masters that the finish has not been exciting in some way or another. It didn't matter who was in the lead, who dropped out of the lead, who won the green jacket. The final round, to me, is always mesmerizing. And there are always stories to be found during this major championship. So this morning, I asked you to call in with your favorite Masters moment. Sure, we can savor those memories and look ahead to many more from this most special major. I have so many favorite Masters moments, but I'm going to tell you just my top two. And you can get on the line now at 877-337-6666. All right, you're going to love this one because you love John Minco. And as you regular listeners to WFAN know, I do the updates from the golf majors for the station. So the updates used to be on every 20 minutes. So back in 2005, John Minco threw it to me from the studio in New York, and just as he came to me during one of my updates, Tiger was chipping off a tight lie on the par 3 16th in the final round. He had come to the 16th hole with that one-shot lead over Chris DeMarco. Tiger used an 8-iron off the tee. His shot landed over and left of the green. The pin was back left. And John Minco throws it to me for an update at precisely that moment. It just happened that Tiger was executing the shot exactly at the time that Minco came to me for an update. You know, he said, let's go to Augusta National, get this update from Ann Liguori. And I'm watching the monitor from my WFAN broadcast booth in the media room at Augusta National. And I'm actually doing a live play-by-play call of what was going on. Tiger had hit this incredible shot, which had to land in a perfect spot on the green on a ridge, and then the ball tracked down the hill toward the hole. And as I was describing the action, I just had this feeling that the ball would go into the hole. It was tracking on a line to go into the cup. So you all remember what happened after that. Tiger's ball with the Nike logo hung on the lip of the cup for what seemed like a couple seconds before dropping in the cup. It was really one of the most dramatic shots I've ever seen at the Masters. And the timing for me could not have been better. I only wish I could get my hands on that tape. I'm sure it's somewhere in my archives. I really have to look hard for it. But here's how it was called on CBS Sports by the great Vern Lundquist.
There's a good chance he doesn't get this inside the Marcos ball.
Love that. So historic. After that incredible birdie on the 16th, Tiger headed to the 17th and 18th holes with a two-shot lead over Chris DeMarco, but Tiger bogeyed the 17th and the 18th, while DeMarco parred the 17th and 18th. Well, they went into a playoff with Tiger winning on the very first hole, the 18th, of the playoff with a birdie. He was 29 years old at the time. It was his fourth green jacket and his ninth major title. And it's hard to believe that that was 15 years ago. All right, my second most favorite Masters moment was when Phil Mickelson won his first major title. It was the 2004 Masters. In his 12 years as a pro golfer, Phil was winless in 46 previous starts at a major. He was 33 years old at the time. Again, Chris DeMarco was in contention. Justin Rose led after the first two rounds. Phil was five shots back after the first round, but he climbed to within three shots of the lead after the second round. Justin Rose struggled in the third round. He carded an 81. Meanwhile, DeMarco and Phil both shot six unders in the third round to share a tie for the lead. Ernie Els was three shots back. So Phil got off to a shaky start in the final round. He and Ernie Els were three over after six holes. Then Ernie made two eagles, shoots a 67. Phil birdied five of the last seven holes, shot a 69. It was just so magical to see Phil drain birdie after birdie. I can still see Phil jumping a foot up in the air in celebration on the 18th after he drained that 18-foot putt for birdie. Here's Jim Nance and his call on CBS Sports.
It's been one of the greatest days in Masters history, plain and simple. And now it comes down to one putt. For the win. Again, grew up with a putting green in his backyard. You can't imagine how many times, like all champion golfers have done, he dreamt of making a putt to win a major. Is it his time?
Yes! At last!
So Phil beats Ernie Els by one shot to win his first major title. He would go on to win two more Masters and five major titles overall so far. Well, yesterday, CBS Sports replayed that 2004 Masters, and Jim Nance had Phil Mickelson on talking about it. It was fun to hear Phil's insight about that first major victory. And today on CBS Sports, this afternoon, they're going to replay the 2019 Masters and Tiger's incredible win, and Tiger will be on with Nance talking about it. Should be pretty compelling. Well, last year's Masters was indeed special. When you put Tiger's win in perspective, it seems even more improbable that he would win. It had been 11 years since his last major title, 2008 U.S. Open, Torrey Pines, and talk about those 11 years. Challenging for him, to say the least. Injury after injury, back surgeries, personal scandal. He really had lost his way after the death of his father. He had finally hit rock bottom May of 2017. He got arrested for DUI in Jupiter, Florida. The police officers found him passed out in the car. It was reported that he had five different painkillers in his system, and that mugshot was pretty scary looking. Fast forward to September 2017, when Tiger was an assistant captain at the President's Cup, which took place at Liberty National in New Jersey. I remember it like it was yesterday. I was sitting in the press conference when Tiger admitted that he may never play competitive golf again. That was the first and only time he had ever said that publicly. It was just shocking. But given his injuries and his lack of play, you know, many were thinking the same thing. Earlier in the year, in April 2017, Dr. Richard Geyer at the Texas Back Institute performed anterior lumbar intrabody fusion surgery on Woods. And by mid-October of 2017, Tiger had received the all-clear from the doctor. And in December, he played in his Hero Challenge, finishing tied for ninth. Then September 2018, he returns to the winner's circle for the first time in 5 years, winning the Tour Championship at Eastlake. It was quite the scene, with so many excited spectators running on the fairway after Tiger on the 18th to cheer him on. So fast forward to last year's Masters. He started the final round two shots behind Francesco Molinari. Play began early in the morning, 7:30 to be exact. I was on the air live with his show, and the final round was underway. It was just kind of weird that it was on so early in the morning for weather reasons. So they get to the par 312. Molinari's tee shot lands in Race Creek, and Tiger's tee shot lands safely over the bunker on the green. He two putts for par. As he gets to the 15th, there's a five-way tie for the lead. Tiger birdies that for the outright lead. He birdies the 16th, almost aced it on the 16th. He is two shots up with two holes to play. He ends up with a one-foot tap-in on the 18th for bogey, wins by one shot. He had accomplished what seemed impossible based on his 11 previous years. He won his fifth green jacket, his 15th major title. It was the first time he had ever come from behind to win a major title. And to think that that was just 1 year ago. Well, we heard earlier in the week that the Masters is rescheduled for the week of November 9 through the 15th. This morning, we'll talk to two Augusta insiders. Austin Rhodes, the top-rated talk show host in Augusta for years, born and raised in Augusta. He'll come on with us at about 7:20. John Patrick, host of the Augusta Golf Show. He'll join us as well. We all work near each other in the media building at Augusta National. We've known each other for a long time, and I'm sure Austin and John will provide some insight on the decision to move the Masters to November and how they think the town and the sports world will adjust. I'm quite surprised that they decided to reschedule for this year. And then at 7:40, New York sports columnist Mark Hanazaro, author of 7 Days in Augusta, he'll join me. And we'll explore golf's greatest tradition, Masters Week. Mark has a lot of engaging tidbits in his book. So that's on slate. We're going to go to the phones right now, 877-337-6666. Frank from Connecticut, you're on the fan. Good morning, Frank.
Happy Easter, Ann.
Frank Darby, one of my favorite people. How are you? Happy Easter to you.
Yeah, I'm doing great. Getting all ready for my little one to come downstairs and see what the Easter Bunny bought. So, but yeah, hey, listen, great day today with the Masters. And I'm always amazed at how many people that don't even play golf know about turning your TV on for the back nine at Augusta today.
Yeah, it's just one of the most compelling days in sports, I think. And probably the hardest ticket to get. Of all of sport. I don't know. Do you ever get down there, Frank? Do you do your show? I know Frank does a show with Brian on course, Sirius Radio. Do you ever get down to Augusta?
Yes, I've been down quite a bit, and I'm definitely going down this year. Looking forward. We have, Brian usually is down there with CBS, so he calls in as we do our show on Wednesday night, so we get some great insights. And I'm looking forward to going down in November because the schedule works out great.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. November Masters. I honestly didn't think that they were going to reschedule. I thought they'd just wait till next year. But we're going to talk to some Augusta insiders in a few minutes to see what it's like in November from a weather standpoint, from the course standpoint. And hey, last week, I know you were listening to the show, and what a difference a week makes. Golf in New York has been officially added to the list of non-essential activities as of a few days ago. I was talking to some people last week, and they said they were playing, but they can't play anymore, unfortunately, in New York.
Yeah, they've been going back and forth with that, and I guess the governor and the mayor are having some talks about that as well. And I think where I live in Fairfield, Connecticut, all three of, Jersey, New York, and Connecticut are kind of together. So I think you may see Connecticut shutting down as well for a couple of weeks.
Oh, too. You guys are still playing golf in Connecticut.
They have options, but I know that a lot of the Fairfield clubs have all gotten together, and I think they're closing down a number of these clubs starting today, after today.
So. I don't know what your opinion is about that. I think, if people obviously adhere to the strict regulations, that people should have the opportunity to play. I mean, what else are you going to do, right? I mean, you can walk the course by yourself. You can drive in a cart by yourself. You don't have to, there's no rakes on the course. They've taken all the rakes off. They've made, they've put foam in cups so that you don't have to touch the pin or the cup. There are things you can do where you can be very careful. So I don't know. I wish they would keep the courses open.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's more for the staff and, no golf carts and just go ahead and walk, by yourself or with a family member as well. So, yes, I'm with you on that one.
Frank, have a happy Easter. Hope your daughter enjoys the goodies. And it's always great to hear from you. Keep up the great work.
Mark Canizero is great. I finished the book a while ago, and we had him on our show. So he'll give you some great insight. So thank you for having me.
Frank, happy Easter. Thanks so much for calling in. Really appreciate it.
Same to you. Bye-bye.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, come back, talk to two Augusta insiders, Austin Rhodes, host of the top-rated Austin Rhodes Show, and John Patrick, host of the Augusta Golf Radio Show. We'll talk to those two guys, good friends of mine, right after this.
It's Sunday morning, and you're talking golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Well, good morning to you. Welcome back to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori. Happy Easter to you. And we go down to Augusta, Georgia, where I normally would be during Masters Week on any normal scenario, which, gosh, how abnormal is this whole crisis? It's just crazy. But joining us now is Austin Rhodes, host of the top-rated Austin Rhodes Show on WGAC in Augusta for 28 years. My host with the most during the 10 days I spend in Augusta covering the Masters every year. He's a lifelong resident of Augusta. And John Patrick, host of the Augusta Golf Radio Show. Hi, guys. Good morning. Welcome to Talking Golf.
Hi, Annie. How are you?
Good.
Good morning, my friend. Good to talk to you again. We miss you.
What's it like in Augusta this morning on this Easter Sunday?
All right. Who's doing the weather, Austin, me or you?
Well, it's a little chilly this morning. I feel like we're missing a major event here. It seems like I'm supposed to be somewhere, but I don't quite know where, no doubt.
Well,
it is chilly and clear. Yes.
Yes, John.
But Annie, we're supposed to get rain by 10 or 11 this morning. And it's supposed to rain all day. So this would have been a day much like Sunday of last year when we got off early and tried to finish early. I don't know, honestly, with the weather forecast, if they would have made it today.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
And remember how weird it was to be on the air at so early on a Sunday morning and these guys are teeing off at 7:30? That was just
crazy. Well, get used to that for November.
Yes. There's going to be a lot of change. First, I wanted to ask you, how surprised are you that Augusta National has decided to reschedule the Masters in November as opposed to just canceling it outright this year?
I think John's more surprised about that than I was. I consistently see decisions from the new leadership at the National that would have never flown 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago. John's more of a traditionalist, I think, when we approach some of these things. And it really is an unusual leadership change with the Augusta National over the course, again, of the last 5 or 10 years. This is not your daddy's Augusta National. These folks really, really, really are on a new page.
It certainly reflects a gradual change of philosophy. Do you agree with that, John?
Yeah, sure. I caution everybody, and again, I hope it happens. I really hope it happens. I think a lot of it, and they were careful in the wording of that press release. They're careful to say, depending on how all of this goes, this is what we hope to do. And I take them at their word. that this is what they hope to do. And I also thought the most interesting thing about the press release to me was the dates that they chose, because I thought if this schedule comes to fruition as planned, fine. If this schedule has to be backed up another month or so and maybe we don't get started until September, they still sit there in November with the hope of holding it. So it's the fact that they chose about the latest date possible that gives me hope that they will do this.
Right, and that was smart on their part, obviously, just so that they wouldn't have to keep changing it and keep going back and forth. But as far as that change of philosophy, Austin, that you mentioned, back in 2003, now this, remember Martha Burke staging a protest against Augusta National for their all-male membership. Hootie Johnson was the chairman of the club back then, and under pressure to admit female members, he announced that the 2003 tournament would be conducted without sponsors. Now, the only reason I bring this up is that Augusta National has always been its own entity, doing its own thing, really not succumbing to pressure of any kind. And I kind of figured perhaps they would just wait until next year. But by rescheduling the tournament in November, I do think you're right. I do think it represents this change in philosophy.
It really is a different attitude. It really, at every level, there's so many small things that we have seen change over the years that we never thought we would have. At the same time, there's this incredible devotion to tradition when it comes to making sure that the tournament itself is played exactly as it's supposed to be played, and the decorum has stayed the same pretty much, and those types of things. Certainly the devotion to excellence at any cost has always been there. But there's so many different changes that we've seen through the years. For instance, I mean, the very mention of the women's amateur that they scheduled a couple of years ago for the very first time, and obviously drive, chip, and putt. These were things that I don't think John Patrick or myself 20 years ago would have said ever under any circumstances would have happened. This is just not, again, the Augusta National that we all knew so well for so many years. It was so stodgy and reluctant to change.
And do you think these changes were the result of Billy Payne becoming the chairman back then, before?
No doubt.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Everything Austin has mentioned is a byproduct of William Porter Payne. You know, Fred Ridley got to announce the women's amateur, but trust me, this was not something they thought about within a year. They don't do that sort of thing. They've got a long-range plan on just about everything that they do. And for those of us that have been fortunate enough to be there, we saw the changes that took place under Chairman Payne. So, you know, especially the infrastructure, especially what happens off of the golf course. So his legacy will live long at that place.
So how do you think the community is going to readjust to a November Masters? I mean, many residents, as you all know, rent out their homes for the week. They vacate. They go elsewhere. They make a lot of money, obviously, renting out their homes. And this new date is really just a couple weeks before Thanksgiving. So how's it going to work out in November from that standpoint?
It's very strange for the school systems, because there is a week-long break about 2 weeks before the Masters is scheduled this year. And then, of course, the Thanksgiving break, which is a week after the Masters is supposed to conclude. So this has really kind of thrown the school systems a curveball. Not saying that they're not going to accommodate, though, because already, matter of fact, the very first day this was announced, I had the superintendent of one of our local systems on my radio show discussing all of the possible options, and there was no doubt that they were going to do everything in their power to accommodate having that week off. There are too many high school students that work the tournament. There are too many adults, for that matter. John and I know many of our friends through the years that take the week off to work in some type of support role for the tournament. So there was no doubt that was going to have to happen. So that was kind of interesting to watch, but there was never any consideration that this town wasn't going to do everything in our power to accommodate this change.
So they'll take that week off, and then about 2 weeks later, they'll have more time off for Thanksgiving.
Absolutely.
Kids will love it. Yeah. How about the hotel rates down there that week? Have they already tripled?
You know, actually, I have a couple of stories of friends who have been able to book hotels for the regular price. Now, will they be able to keep those reservations? We'll see. But I've got a couple of Golf Writer friends who have just, you know, taken upon themselves to check into those dates, and they're in Aiken, and they're here, and they're here for regular prices. But we'll see. We'll see. I don't think economically, if this tournament does indeed happen, I don't think economically it'll be much different. I mean, who doesn't want to be here for that one fall Masters?
I'm with John. I think that it becomes such a unique and singular event that it will have a special flavor all of its own, and it might even be even more sought after than usual. I mean, I would assume there are going to be pockets of ticket prices that just jump tremendously toward the end of November, or the middle of November, rather. I think it'll wait. I don't think that right this minute you'll be able to go out and spend $5,000-$6,000 on a tournament ticket, but I think that week, once it's going on, they'll probably go as high as $7,000 or $8,000.
Especially,
go ahead, John.
Especially if, again, if that calendar gets pushed back a little bit, and the Masters becomes one of the few things that actually happens.
Mm-hmm. The course normally doesn't even open for members until October, right? It's shut down between what, May and October, so. This will be interesting to get, they'll get everything ready. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that it's going to be as pristine as it always is in April and November. But what about the changes in November, John? You know, the weather's going to be a little different. The course the grass will be a little different.
I still have a belief it's going to be Bermuda grass. And actually had Gary Player on the golf show next week, and he and I kind of agree on this. I've played the golf course in the fall, and the rye, this is a totally rye golf course. The premise of this golf course is to overseed it, nurture it for the 7 or 8 months through the winter time, and get it ready to look as great as it can in April. That's how they've always operated. No other golf course in the country operates that way. The rye is very tough to get in November. Here, we don't get cold enough yet. The nights aren't cold enough yet. So I believe it's going to be a Bermuda golf course. The greens will be bent grass, as they always have been. They will be fine. They've got a system in there. They've got a system under the whole golf course, but a system there to make sure that'll be fine. But I don't see how it's going to be ryegrass, quite as green. It's going to be beautiful. They play East Lake in September on Zoysia Fairways, Bermuda grass, and it looks spectacular. So it'll be fine. I just don't believe it will be a ryegrass, which is a different grass for these guys to play off of. In, you know, at that golf course on Bermuda grass is a little bit different.
Yeah, and of course the bent that allows the ball to roll more consistently and increases the speed, so the greens will be fine with the bent?
Yeah, the greens will be fine. The caddies will tell you in the fall, the first thing they'll tell you is, you know, not as fast as Masters. Well, because they don't try to get them as fast as Masters at that time of year. And if getting them fast for the Masters in November damages them a little bit, they'll be fine. They'll fix that. They'll take care of that in the weeks that follow.
And the weather, how will the weather be compared to April?
You know, for those of us that play golf all year round here, we've often thought November was the absolute best month to play golf, primarily because we're coming out of our harsh summer months. It's almost like a flip-flop, Annie. You know, we have warm days with that cool one that kind of touches you in April. We have cooler ones with a warm day that kind of touches you in November. I think it'll be 10, 12 degrees cooler. I mean, it may be mid-60s, lower 70s. I mean, we can get those days in November, a lot of those days in November. I don't know if that helps with your wardrobe, but that's what we do.
we also have on occasion the old frost on the pumpkin. So there could be some very, very chilly mornings out at Augusta National, just depending on what's going on in the atmosphere at the time. It'll be a very, very interesting Masters as far as the colors go. John sent me a picture not long ago of his day in November when he played, and it is absolutely gorgeous. The foliage, people were asking, are they going to bring flowers in? Are they going to delay the blooms of the azaleas? Is that possible? That's impossible. And they're not going to try. They're going to just allow the National to do what it does that time of year, and it's going to look much different. As far as its playing goes, John covered that. But get ready for a Masters that looks like it's taking place in the Smoky Mountains instead of at springtime at Augusta.
As we had mentioned, a different time frame. They're going to have to start earlier. They're going to have to finish earlier. There are, 96 players as of right now. The field is set at 96 players. So you start to do the math. If they do threesomes, it's 16 threesomes. If they go off 11 minutes, it's going to take them 3 hours on each, on each tee to get off. So if they do 8 to 11, last group's going to finish about 4 o'clock or a little bit later. They may go 7:30. They may go even a little bit earlier. They don't normally do that. But all of that's going to be factored in. I've had some people say they'd like to see the former champions kind of politely bow out and, reduce the field a little bit. But get ready for an early start and an early finish.
Right, because the sun will set at 5:24 late afternoon on the final Sunday in November. So
yes.
That's early, because normally they wouldn't finish till 7:30.
Yeah, they're just, a couple of holes into the back nine by 5:30.
Right. So what about the wind, too? The wind, from what I've read, would be coming from the north, John. So, you're going to have wind against on, 1, 17, 18, and a couple of those par fives.
I'm a staff meteorologist, Dan Liguori.
That's right. Hey.
We
do our research.
I don't, I can't say that I remember windy days in November. March is kind of our windiest month around here, as the golfer in me talks. Could happen. I mean, to Austin's point with the frost, some of that will be all very interesting. The weather could play a bigger role in this golf tournament than anybody anticipates. From frost to cold to nice to windy, we'll just have to see. We have no idea.
All right, I'm going to put you guys on the spot before I let you both go. Who will win in November?
Well, I'll tell you this. I will tell you this. If it's a chilly tournament, if we get out there and it's, upper 50s, lower 60s, mid 60s, I think that hurts Tiger's chances. I don't think that back.
You're right.
I don't think that back likes cold weather. So I think that's something to think about. I've seen a lot of talk where this could play right into Rory's hands. Rory, of course, going for the career Grand Slam if he wins here. All right, sure, you're putting us on the spot. I'll say Rory.
I would have to agree with John. Given the conditions, I mean, this is more like the British Open weather-wise than it's going to be like the Masters. But again, who knows? How often do these predictions completely blow up in our faces? I mean, we have no idea.
Only every time we make them.
Every time.
Exactly. Rory's the guy.
Yeah, well, I did have to mention one thing there that's kind of lurking in the background. It's a major story. ESPN is legitimately discussing doing College Game Day in Augusta. Legitimately. Uh-huh. I mean, these conversations are actually happening. And we've got virtually every major university in the state of Georgia is playing a home game that day. I think only one of like 6 or 7 teams is going to be out of state. And apparently the Augusta National, believe it or not, I've actually heard this from a member, the conversations are taking place. John, have you heard anything?
I've heard, yes, Austin's right. Georgia is home against Tennessee. Georgia Tech is home against Notre Dame. But I have heard more than likely not taking place on the grounds and on the campus. Somewhere else in the city, because they want the crowd, they want the signs, they want all of that going on, so they would not do it on the grounds, but they might do it somewhere else in the city. Yes, there's an awful lot of talk that College Game Day may be here that Saturday.
Well, either way, it's going to be so much fun. I can't wait. I miss you guys. Hi to Bobby, Bo, my favorite cat on the planet, Atticus. My Augusta family, and hello to Lisa, John. Have a happy, happy Easter, and I can't thank you guys enough for getting up early on this Easter Sunday to check in. Thanks so much.
Happy Easter.
Appreciate it, guys. Austin Rhodes and John Patrick. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, come back, and check in with Mark Canizzaro, New York's Post sports columnist and author of 7 Days in Augusta. We'll be back.
Ann Liguori is talking golf on Sunday morning with you right here on The Fan.
Well, good morning. Hope you're having a great morning so far. Happy Easter to you. Welcome back to Talkin' Golf. And it goes so fast. We want to say hello to Mark Canizzaro. We continue with our Inside the Masters show. And Mark, as you know, is a sports columnist for the New York Post and author of 7 Days in Augusta. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Ann. I wish I was in my seventh day of Augusta right now as we speak with you down there.
I know. Don't you miss it? I really do miss it. This is such
had a lot
special
of pangs
week.
This week, you know, just from the moment I was supposed to fly down there on Sunday of last week, you know, a week ago today, and obviously the weekend, I actually did a column for today's paper on, or actually Saturday's paper, on spoke to Jim Nance for a little while, who you know well, and just kind of what he was missing and whatnot, and actually he's been rebroadcasting. Yesterday was Mickelson's win in 04, and today they're redoing Tiger's win from last year, and they've basically spent some time on Zoom with Tiger and Phil, and they're kind of doing the color commentary with, you know, kind of spliced in with some live interviews, or, you know, some taped to live interviews, I should say, to talk about what went on and what was going in their mind process. So it's kind of all of that kind of stuff brings it all back to you, you know. You know, it's a little bit of a surrogate experience to watch it on TV, but it's not the same thing when it's not going on real. So hopefully we'll be back there in November.
I know, but you know, it's fun to see Phil on with Nance yesterday. I watched that whole, because that's one of my favorite moments, you know, Masters moments, when Phil won that his first major title, and you know, it was just seeing him jump in the air, and, you know, Nance was kind of teasing him about that jump the whole time. But and you had Phil write the foreword for your book. It truly was wonderful to get, you know, Phil. How tough is it to get Lefty to do that?
Well, I've got a very good relationship with him, and he was nice enough to do it. I asked him to do it. We spent, you know, a good couple hours together on the forward, a couple of sessions. We did the session on the forward, and we also, you know, he was, you know, spliced in it about the book, certainly with his 04 win and some really fun anecdotes, you know, about some of his experiences in there that not necessarily were tournament experiences. He had one, you know, where he in 07 that he told me, in 17 that he told me about, that he went and spent three or so days with Tom Brady, staying in one of the cabins down there and playing 36 a day, and had a great anecdote in there about Brady wanting, you know, early morning one morning asking Phil if he'd, you know, have a football toss with him, because Brady was about to go out to California to throw with and work out with Julian Edelman. And Phil was like, you know, you're the greatest quarterback of all time. Of course I'm going to have a throw with you. And Phil, he talked about how the velocity with which Brady threw the ball to him, and Phil, like, trying not to break his fingers a month before he's going to play the Masters that year, was hysterical.
I mean, what a visual. Can you see these guys having a toss around, the 10th fairway?
They were staying in the cabins down 10, and it was early in the morning, and they were working out, and that's when Brady asked him. And so Phil was, the way Phil tells it, it was like dawn, really, so it wasn't really that light out, so it was hard to see, and he said Brady was just whistling balls at him, and he was trying to catch the football with the tip and with his fingers, and Phil told me a couple of times, you know, it hit his palm when he was catching it, and he felt pain shooting up his arms to his shoulder, and I'm thinking to myself, can you imagine if he was knocked out of that 2017 Masters because he was trying to catch balls with Brady? Would have been classic Phil.
And they were supposed to be putting together some kind of match, right, with Tiger and Brady.
Yeah, well, with Tiger and Brady and Peyton Manning. There's been talk of that. I don't know how real it is at this point. I know it was a little bit pie in the sky, you know, with the virus, you know, with everything shut down, you know, with obviously the crisis, you know, that we're in with the coronavirus pandemic and whatnot. you know, trying to dream up a made-for-TV type of thing where there'd be social distancing and whatnot. But at this moment, that's not off the ground. Just the PGA Tour has to sign off on it, for starters, because they own all the rights, the broadcast rights for anything these guys do. It would be a fun thing. I'm sure that Brady and Phil would take on Tiger and Manning. Brady and Phil are kind of tight, and Tiger and Manning are kind of tight. So they would be fascinated to see. But I know the tour is trying to, as you know, and, you know, get back to their schedule in June, which to me sounds, I mean, listen, I'm all for it. I mean, we're all starved for sports, but it seems a little aggressive to me. But I'm thinking if they do get rolling, I can't imagine there'll be spectators. You know, maybe they make it, you know, the tour, you know, the tournaments, some made-for-TV events.
Yeah, it was really, that announcement last Monday seemed very, very aggressive. We'll get into that in a second. But, you know, a lot of cool tidbits in this book. I love what Paul Azinger told you, that unlike any other place, the more he plays Augusta National, the more he learned, obviously, the more intimidated it made him. And he said the more he played, the worse he got, which I find fascinating. Also see how that could happen, because
you see all the demons and you see all the danger zones and spots and whatnot that you maybe don't see if you just go there as a wide-eyed young player. And you know, you're at Augusta and you're just embracing it and you're bombing away. You know, I mean, as you know, you've been down there for years with me. You know, the fairways are very generous. There's not a lot of trouble. The trouble's really around the greens and whatnot, and certainly where you're positioning your tee shots so you have the proper, the proper approach into these pins and whatnot. So, yeah, Azinger is absolute gold. I mean, I think he's a fantastic commentator. I always have thought that. He's so colorful and rich in his descriptions and whatnot. He's got a number of anecdotal things in there, including what you said. One of my favorites, frankly, was he played the second round of the 97 Masters with Tiger. He was paired with Tiger, and he had never played with Tiger before. And he said to his caddy, "I want to see this guy hit a ball. I've heard all this hype. Let's see what the deal is." And he walked out of that. I think Tiger shot 66. And Zinger shot 73, and Zinger said it was the easiest 66 he's ever seen in his life. And he basically walked off that round and said to his caddy, "I'm not sure I'm ever going to be able to win on this tour again if this guy's playing." So, I mean, it was, you know, just some really fun, colorful, descriptive stuff. Azinger is really, really excellent.
Yeah, no, he's very honest, and I appreciate that in his commentary. I think he's done a great job in the booth. Getting back to Mickelson for a second, I love how you described what, you know, the champions dinner and how all these champions get to plan their menu. And something I didn't know, back when he won in 2004, he served paella to pay tribute to the late Seve Ballesteros.
Yes.
That was a great, you know, Phil does those kinds of things. He's very thoughtful.
Yeah, he's, you know, it was, you know, Seve was his inspiration. You know, he used to watch on television, and you know, it's no accident that Phil plays with that kind of chance-taking, swashbuckling style that Seve was known for, you know, and became such an incredible scrambler, you know, the greatest scrambler of our time, you know, since Seve. And, you know, Seve was always Phil's inspiration, and that was a pretty cool moment and a pretty cool gesture on Phil's part. The interesting thing is, you know, Mickelson loves to tell stories. He loves to let people know that he knows a lot about everything, you know, or at least a little bit about everything. And he's a bit of a BSer in that way, and he's the first to acknowledge it. And at that dinner, he told me, is really the one time he doesn't want to tell stories and be kind of the talk, you know, be the guy that's talking. He says, "I just want to sit back and listen to the stories of these old timers and these incredible, you know, old masters recollections and whatnot." And he said, "That's a night I don't want to be the one telling stories. I just want to be listening," which is pretty cool.
Right. I mean, you know, to hear Gary Player say, you know, tell stories about sitting next to Bobby Jones and the fact that Gary actually cut his meat at the dinner because Bobby's hands were riddled with arthritis. I mean, those stories are unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's the unique thing about that dinner. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, listen, I mean, you know, other tournaments have dinners, past champions and things like this, but the Masters is unique in that First of all, it's the only major championship that's played in the same venue every year. So there's history made every year at that place. And new chapters are written every year, right? And, you know, what you just, you know, stated there, I mean, a guy like, you know, Mickelson or Patrick Reed or Tiger or, the quote-unquote younger generation of winners, you know, Jordan Spieth, they could sit there and a guy like Gary Player is a bridge to where they are now, you know, to back to the Bobby, you and I can't, you know, we weren't around when Bobby Jones was around, you know? So, and all we've ever done is heard stories, you know? So, the older generation is a bridge to the guys that we never saw before, you know? That's what makes that unique, and that's where when you hear stories like that from Player and Jack, that's what makes it special.
And I know a lot of people probably ask you, because a lot of people ask me, how can they get tickets to the Masters? And it's obviously the most difficult ticket to get. And you were talking about this in the book. And, if you purchase a badge from Augusta National, if you can get on that list somehow, which is impossible, but the badge only costs $375 for the entire week.
For the week.
But,
incredible.
Most people have to go through ticket brokers, to get tickets to go. And you said last year's badge went for $12,500 a week.
Yeah, I mean, crazy. And there may have been more. There may have been some that were more than that, I mean, those were some of the things that I researched, at the particular times. But, it's a little bit like, in the old year, say old days, I hate to do that, but, when Giant Stadium was Giant Stadium and the Giants were the Giants, for example, here in our area, people had season tickets. Those season tickets for the Giants, there were thousands and thousands of people on a waiting list for that, and the waiting list moved glacially because all of those tickets were in people's families, and they went from generation to generation. And it's very much the same with Augusta and the Masters. The quote unquote patrons, as they call them, they've got the badges, and they get passed down from, I'm sure there's a million great stories about divorces and, who's getting the Masters badges and all that kind of stuff, that's what happens. So what happens is, there's not many of them out there, and the ones that are out there that are available, they go to the ticket brokers, and the cost is massive. It's the most difficult ticket in sports to get, and really, frankly, I think it's probably the most expensive one to buy on the secondary market, which makes it, to be honest with you, Ann, I'm going to stop rambling here a little bit, but because the Masters is so exclusive and so difficult to get into, and because the golf course nobody can go on, because it's the most exclusive place outside of, Cypress Point or it's right up there with Cypress Point and, say, Pine Valley, to me the Masters has always been this kind of mythical, sporting object for golf fans and for sports fans, because they can't get there, most of them, So that was kind of the genesis of the book, was to try to bring somebody there for the week, and this is the thing. These are a cross-section of the things that I've seen in the 25 years that I've covered it, and it wasn't just the things that took place on the golf course. It was whether it was, sitting down with Jim Nantz at the Butler Cabin. I didn't even know where the Butler Cabin was till probably my eighth Masters. It was, to me, it was just that place where Nantz and the chairman showed up on, once the tournament was over on Sunday and handed over the green jacket. So things like that, what goes on under that oak tree, all the movers and shakers in the world of golf for 7 days are all congregating under this oak tree outside the clubhouse. John Daly down the street, signing memorabilia and whatnot, out of Hooters outside of his RV. Just things like that you don't see on television. I try to bring the reader so that as if, he or she were there that week.
So many great tidbits. I could go on and on. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but I really enjoyed it. It's called 7 Days in Augusta. Definitely pick it up. You'll love it. There's so much inside information. I want to keep you on the show. We'll have to do a part two.
We'll do it anytime, Ann. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks so much and continued success. Mark Cannizzaro, author of 7 Days in Augusta. Well, gosh, we have to wrap this up. Talking Golf with Ann Liguori was brought to you by Travelers Insurance. For auto, home, and business, Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. Thanks to Austin Rhodes. Thanks to John Patrick, Mark Cannizzaro, who you just heard. Thanks to Pete Hoffman in the studio. Stay tuned for the Sports Edge with Rick Wolf. And get in touch with me on Twitter at Ann Liguori, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, the Ann Liguori on Instagram. Happy Easter to you. Keep smiling. Stay strong. And I will talk to you next Sunday morning right here on Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66. The Fan, WFAN, New York.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.